This is your Polycast for Friday, July 29th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, now that the national conventions are over, what will the candidates at the top of the ticket mean for races down the ballot? The Democratic National Convention is over. Hillary Clinton accepted the party nomination last night in Philadelphia in front of a cheering, flag-waving crowd. Like the Republicans, the week started rough, but for the most part, the party seemed to come together by the end of the convention. Clinton used the speech to tell Americans more about herself. It lacked the raw emotion of Michelle Obama's and the soaring rhythms of Barack Obama's earlier speeches in the week, but it did present the contrast she hoped to with the one Donald Trump delivered in Cleveland last week. She appealed to Bernie Sanders supporters, independent voters, and Republicans to join her campaign.
If you believe that companies should share profits, not pad executive bonuses, join us. If you believe the minimum wage should be a living wage and no one working full time should have to raise their children in poverty, join us. If you believe that every man, woman, and child in America has the right to affordable health care, join us. If you believe that we should say no to unfair trade deals, that we should stand up to China, that we should support our steel workers and auto workers and homegrown manufacturers, then join us. If you believe we should expand Social Security and protect a woman's right to make her own health care decisions, then join us. And yes, if you believe that your working mother, wife, sister, or daughter deserves equal pay, join us.
Clinton's speech got high marks from some Minnesota DFL leaders. Mark Zedeklik reports.
Superdelegate Rick Stafford, who chaired the DFL in the early 90s, is a Hillary Clinton supporter. Stafford said he thought Clinton did a good job with her speech.
She, I think, had a great balance between talking about what she would do, her plan of action for bringing our country together as we versus I. Her speech was great blend, I think, in terms of talking about what she was going to do, and a few hits at Donald.
Most of Minnesota's delegation came to Philadelphia supporting Bernie Sanders. Clinton tried to reach out to Sanders fans, saying the country needs their ideas and energy. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Philadelphia.
As Democrats head home from their national convention, they have plenty of questions about how presidential nominee Hillary Clinton will affect down-ballot contests in November. In Minnesota, there are no major statewide races this year, but feelings about Clinton as well as Republican nominee Donald Trump could influence voter turnout and the results of some congressional and legislative races. Tim Pugmire reports.
The Democratic National Convention closed last night with Hillary Clinton accepting the nomination and setting the stage for the final 15 weeks of the campaign.
Americans don't say, I alone can fix it. We say, we'll fix it together.
Clinton supporters see her as a strong candidate who will help other Democrats on the ballot. They also believe negative feelings about Trump will help their cause. Lana Slavitt is a Clinton delegate from Edina.
Well, I know in my district, our congressman is Eric Paulson, and he has said that he would support the Republican nominee, and that happens to be Donald Trump. And Congressional District 3 is not a district that's going to go for Donald Trump, so I actually think Hillary Clinton really helps us in that district.
It could be a much different story in parts of rural Minnesota where opposition to Clinton and support for Trump are stronger. Minnesota DFL Chair Ken Martin said the presidential campaign is already factoring into legislative races.
You know, as much as our candidates would like to talk about local issues, what we're already seeing at the door is that they're pulled into conversations about the national issues and the presidential race. And so there's no doubt that it will have an impact on those races.
The presidential race drives voter turnout. That's a point of concern for Democrats who have not yet achieved the unity they stress this week in Philadelphia. Many supporters of Bernie Sanders say they still aren't ready to commit to voting for Clinton or helping her get elected. Carl Keene, a Sanders delegate from Moorhead, said the party has a lot of work to do to reach those people.
A lot of the people I've talked to are not happy with either candidate and are going to go another option, whether it's Libertarian or Green Party. And some are going to just write in, is what the feedback I've had.
Some have also threatened to sit out the election. That's why Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton spent time in Philadelphia this week imploring Sanders supporters to get past their disappointment and support Clinton. Dayton said their support is crucial.
These are party leaders, also influence leaders in the party. What they say about the convention, what they say about experience they had, what they say about Secretary Clinton is going to influence a lot of people back in their home districts. So it's very important.
Back in Minnesota, legislative leaders from both parties are trying to calculate the impact of the presidential race as part of their campaign strategy. All 201 seats are on the ballot, and majority control of the House and Senate is on the line. Republican Senate Minority Leader David Hahn of Eden Prairie is predicting that Clinton's unpopularity will help his caucus pick up seats.
Obviously, she's going to get the hardcore, you know, committed Democrat vote, the 30% of the people that are going to vote Democrat no matter who's on the ticket. They're going to get that vote. We know that. But you look at the people who are uncommitted, the undecideds, the people who are independents, I'm not sure that Hillary Clinton is going to attract very many of those people.
DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach of Cook said Clinton is doing better in the suburbs than in rural areas. But Bach said he thinks the DFL incumbents in greater Minnesota will be fine.
I think they'll be judged on their own record. I don't think they're going to be judged on Secretary Clinton's record, either as a senator or a first lady or a secretary of state. Having incumbent members, I think, distinguishes them from other candidates.
Bach said he thinks Clinton's popularity over Trump in the suburbs could help the DFL pick up some districts. His list includes the Eden Prairie seat of Senator Hahn. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News in Philadelphia.
In Minneapolis, the city attorney says two major changes in labor law should not be put to voters. City Attorney Susan Siegel issued a legal opinion yesterday. It's a roadblock on the way to the ballot for two of the most hotly contested issues in the Twin Cities right now, but supporters say they'll battle on. Tim Nelson has more.
The two proposed measures involve police liability insurance and the minimum wage paid by employers in the city. The first would ask voters if the city should require its 840 police officers to get professional liability insurance, potentially subsidized by the city. Bad officers, supporters say, would be forced out by the cost of claims against them. Michelle Gross is founder of the group Communities United Against Police Brutality.
The issue is the many, many cases that the city pays out large sums of money for, like to the tune of $2.5 million a year on average, for misconduct, and they don't have any breaks. They don't have any, seem to have any breaks on the process.
The second measure would ask voters to approve a $15 an hour minimum wage to follow the mandatory sick leave that the city council already approved earlier this year. That's set to take effect in 2017. Stephanie Goska is with CTOOL, an advocacy group for low-wage workers, particularly fast food and janitorial workers. It's one of several groups pushing for the wage charter amendment in Minneapolis.
Corporations have to pay their employees a living wage because workers are not able to survive off of the current federal minimum wage.
Both proposals could be addressed by the city council itself, but neither has made much headway at City Hall. That's what prompted supporters to start a petition drive, hoping to take the matter directly to voters this fall. They turned in their signatures earlier this summer, and city officials say they got enough. But even with those signatures, the city council asked for a legal opinion on whether the measures could be valid. The city allows charter amendments for city functions, like the one that restricts city spending on professional sports facilities. But it doesn't allow voters to enact regular ordinances. The city attorney's office recommended the council turn away both petitions. The legal opinions say the insurance provision isn't allowed under state law, and the minimum wage issue is, quote, invalid because the petition is an ordinance proposal cloaked as a charter amendment. Supporters say they'll push to get the measure on the ballot anyway and may go to court to get before voters. Ginger Jensen is a spokesperson for 15 Now Minnesota, a wage advocacy group.
You know, if the Minneapolis city charter can regulate such things as liquor sales, it can certainly provide that a basic duty of government in Minneapolis is to ensure the general welfare by providing for this living wage.
Critics urged the city to heed the legal advice. Both the Downtown Council and the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce said the wage proposal risked setting a dangerous precedent. Peter Nelson is vice president and senior policy fellow at the Conservative Center for the American Experiment and has written critically of efforts to change labor law at the municipal level. He says employment law is complex and wide-ranging and doesn't fit well within local jurisdictions.
Wage provisions in, you know, in Minneapolis versus a wage provision in St. Louis Park versus a wage provision in Brooklyn Center will create all sorts of problems for a business because these employees don't necessarily just work in Minneapolis. They might work in Minneapolis half the week and St. Louis Park half the week, and then all of a sudden you've got to change your payment policies based on where they're working.
The city attorney did write draft ballot questions for the council to consider if officials decide to ignore the legal opinions. Council President Barb Johnson said there will be votes to put at least one of the matters on the ballot anyway, but she wasn't sure if there were enough to ignore the advice of the city attorney. The council is scheduled to take up the matter next week. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here next week.